It's the Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Today, Mayor Bill Peduto is making his monthly visit to the program. There is much to discuss, including all of the excitement surrounding the Penguins' Stanley Cup victory and, of course, the parade. Mayor Peduto, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello, Paul.
You can join the conversation with a comment or question for the mayor at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. We'll get to the serious stuff a little later, but this is an extraordinary time for our city. And you had a chance, Mayor Peduto, to speak at the Penguins Parade yesterday, which set a record for the largest sports celebration in the city's history. Between 4 and 500,000 people showed up downtown. Thank God it wasn't today with the way the weather is. But describe what it was like to be in the middle of all that yesterday.
I don't know. You know, there was part of it that I walked behind the honor guard well ahead of the team. And with that part, there was just a lot of excitement in people's eyes. You could just see it as you're walking and you can see, you know, families and everything else. And it makes you feel really proud. But the second part of it is you feel kind of weird. You know, I wasn't on the power play, right? This isn't. So I got to represent the people of the city of Pittsburgh, the county executive, the people of Allegheny County. We soaked it in, but it was really about an amazing team. I said it on stage. There are so many storylines to this team they'll be writing about and talking about for decades. You know, it wasn't just the HBK line or Phil Kessel coming from where he was basically tossed out of Toronto or Carl Hagelin moving over to the West Coast and all of a sudden his game wasn't the same anymore. You know, the core guys of Chris Letang and Chris Kunitz and Pascal Dupuis and Marc-Andre Fleury, Gino and Sid getting to lift the cup again, and all the trades and acquisitions and the free agents over the summer, and Colin not sure if he was going to play another year and winning another cup. And just there are so many great stories. And Coach Sullivan. I mean, it all sort of pulled together. But the one thing you felt, if you're a hockey fan, was you didn't think this team was going to lose. Like, it could be down by two goals going in the third period, and you're still like, oh, we're going to win this game. I mean, and I know they felt it because they exuded. So I had the opportunity to see David Morehouse.
Penguins owner, or Penguins CEO.
President. Yeah,
President. Sorry.
He's... It may be president and CEO. I'm not sure. After this, he probably is. But no, I saw him an event for Hillary Clinton on Tuesday. And I'm there like, man, how do you feel? And he's like, relieved. I'm like, wow. I go, really? And he goes, yeah. I go, okay, because I thought I was going crazy and lost the ability to feel joy. I didn't feel after the Ranger series. Every series, every game to me was like, phew. You know, it wasn't like, yes. I got really locked into these games and just sitting there in the first and second period by myself at home watching it. And then the third period, like, I got to get out. And what he told me is he'd watch the first and second period. And then no matter what arena they were in, he'd just walk the halls during the third period. He's like, 2-1 lead. I can't watch this. You know, it's like it was killing him. And so the final feeling he had was relief. And I think in the back of a lot of people's mind, there was this expectation they're going to win it. They're going to win it. Don't blow it. And so it was a different type of feeling than 2009 or 91, 92. You know, it was almost like destiny.
So back in December when the Penguins, you know, made the coaching change and they brought in Mike Sullivan and they weren't even in a spot to qualify for the playoffs, could you have envisioned what happened for this team and for this city in the last few weeks?
Well, you and I are both hockey nuts, right?
True.
And most people probably don't realize that we eat this stuff. I mean, we live it. It's our passion.
We both play,
and it's sort of just part of who we are. So I'm reading the Canadian blogs. I'm reading, you know, I'm debating some 12-year-old from Saskatchewan about, you know, trades that should happen. And whose names are appearing? Chris Letang. Sidney Crosby, Guy Lafleur saying he needs to change location. Gino. I mean, they're talking about breaking up the core of this team at that time. So, no, I wasn't thinking playoffs. I was thinking, you know, how many years potentially before we're able to build a team again. That's what made this year so special. this team's like Pittsburgh. It's resilient. It had all the adversity that any team faced in this season and more, and it ended up hoisting the cup.
Did you get to spend some time with the cup?
Nope.
No?
Nope. So
not even a sip of champagne out of the cup?
Not even the opportunity to touch it. So a couple things. Number one, like I said, I'm not on the team. So I don't wear a Penguins jersey when I am in a parade. I wear my uniform, which is a suit. Number two, I don't believe anyone should ever hoist a cup over their head unless you actually won the cup. It's bad protocol. I mean, that's for those that have actually earned it. And so what I was hoping to do was to get a picture next to the cup. But those guys never let go. they never, it may have sat on a table for about 30 seconds, but every moment that it was there during the parade, it was in one of their hands, and that's where it should have been.
An acquaintance of mine was describing what it was like in Chicago when the Bears won the Super Bowl, and he said it's amazing to be in a city when something like that is happening because everyone is caught up in hoping for the same thing, and all of a sudden, you look around at people in your city, and everyone's your friend.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
did that happen here?
Yeah, without a doubt. So everything is so freaking polarizing right now. Everything, you know, it's every issue is polarizing. The whole political landscape's polarizing. We divide ourselves by age. We divide ourselves by race. We divide ourselves by religion. We divide ourselves by any socioeconomic factor, and then all of that gets together and puts away all of that division. And just cheers, we won the cup. And we is everybody there, and there's no division. That, to me, was my Stanley Cup victory. That's as a mayor, and to be able to see your city united and to see all the people together, that's the championship that a city gets.
Now we find ourselves with the business side to be addressed. And I know that one of the things for you, Mayor, you're finding yourself pushing the Penguins to get moving on development of the former Civic Arena site. Talk about what's going on and why you are feeling this sense of urgency that, hey, guys, it's time to get moving on this.
Well, there's two reasons. Number one, the market's really hot, and we want to be able to strike while it's hot. We don't know what 5 years will bring. Deal was agreed to back in 2008, 2016. Developers are ready to go, and we're still getting delays and requests for more government money, and we're really not in a position for either. And, you know, at times with David and Travis over at the Pens, they sort of take that personal, but it's not personal. I like those guys. I actually consider them my friends. But at the same time, I have to see that the community agreement is followed through, and that the development happens, because while it's not being developed, it's like a big cash machine. All that parking revenue is going directly back to the team. So the team has sort of a disincentive to develop because they continually get cash. And so I have to be the one that pushes for the public to see the development occur.
Are there other reasons why the Penguins are saying we're just not ready? Is there any side to it from their standpoint that you can see that you understand? But even though you're obviously wanting to get going on.
Yeah. No, I mean, we talk weekly. We haven't really had the opportunity to talk much during the playoffs. They had some other priorities. But obviously, this is something that they'll come with issues that may be needed to be addressed. And they're no different than any other development that occurs within the city. And we work through them. And we got development occurring in cranes all over the city. It's time to see it down on those 28 acres.
And as far as the economic impact of the Stanley Cup, what would you say that having this playoff run and the playoffs in NHL hockey are longer than in any other major sport? They go on for 2 months. So
training camp starts next week.
It almost seems that. Well, they've got the mini Olympics coming up in September, that world tournament. But how much money does that bring into the city?
No idea. So I'm not a big one on Tim sending me some numbers. So I'm not a big guy on that. I it's minimal.
Can I see those numbers,
yeah,
Tim?
He's saying
225,000 per game. Wow.
Yeah.
There, that's not some small chunk of change.
No, but I mean, the amount of overtime that we're paying our officers, the amount of overtime we're paying our medical crews, we even have firefighters. There's partnerships that we have with the county, with the state. I mean,
clean up after the celebration, yeah, clean up after the parade.
Yeah, so let's just say you break even, or you may make a nickel or two. That's not why you do it. And so it really is beyond that. It is a civic engagement on the highest level, and it is the costs and the benefits outweigh anything financial. So I used to look at that stuff, and when I was on council, I don't look at it anymore. I look at little kids that are standing in a parade route as I'm marching down, telling them there's a whole bunch of penguins behind me, and seeing their eyes light up. I look at young millennials who are no longer leaving the city and telling them, hey, I'm just the opening act. It gets a lot better. And seeing them laugh and seeing a city come together. And there's no money on that.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Mayor Bill Peduto. Okay, on to an item in the news today that I'd like to give you an opportunity to respond to. Yesterday, City of Pittsburgh Controller Michael Lamb released a performance audit of your office in which he said auditors estimated your office spent about $283,000 remodeling staff offices after your 2014 inauguration. Your chief of staff, Kevin Acklin, objected to this estimate and said auditors erroneously calculated labor costs. What would you like to say at this point about this?
Well, a couple things. Number one, you know, we met with the controller to show him his numbers were wrong, but the report still contained them. There would still be workers working in our office right now if those numbers were correct. You know, it's thousands of hours that he calculated, whereas a two crew to paint an office took one day. And mathematically, it's not even possible. It's the number of hours that he attributes to it would not even be mathematically possible. So he got a back of a napkin number from a former employee from DPW and used it as a report. The one thing that we don't have, which we're going to have now, is that will all be documented. That will all be automated. That the time and where our workers are working will all be tracked electronically. And there won't be any pen and paper type analysis done again. And we're going to do that, and we'll do the oversight so it's done properly. Secondly, the total cost of everything that we did for over 20 offices within the entire side, that side of the fifth floor, amounts to 1% of the money we spent taking care of facilities throughout the city. So instead of concentrating on the 99% of fixing firehouses and police zones and the different divisions within public works and different departments, the controller decided to focus all his attention on the 1% that was in the mayor's office. Kind of interesting.
When you presented your figures to him yesterday or in the course of the discussion, I mean, what was their response? Was there an aha moment, or are they sticking by their figures?
No, I mean, we presented it back in a letter from Kevin Acklin that went through it and showing that it was mathematically impossible. And it was like, nope, we got this number. It was done pen and paper by a former employee of Public Works, and so we're running with it.
It should be noted that the auditors praised you for creating an office that finds and obtains grants and for making city financial information available to the public online, so it wasn't all bad.
Well, I like that part. That was a good part. That part was right, actually.
I'm all glad to hear that. Yeah. Mayor, you are currently being urged by Pittsburgh's highest-ranking police supervisors, except the chief, in a signed letter to reject a proposed contract they fear would cause a mass exodus among rank-and-file officers because reportedly it's a contract that would give annual raises of no more than 2% and require police to pay more toward their health care. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, those conditions that they're asking me to reject, the FOP leadership hasn't been upfront with their members. Those are the conditions of Act 47. Those aren't being discussed or debated or negotiated through the arbitration panel. So every union employee in the city, every single union employee in the city is getting a 7% raise over the next 5 years, as is required by Act 47. For me to say every union employee except police would not only be against the law, because this is a legal agreement with the state, but it would also be thrown out immediately by the Act 47 coordinators, which is why the arbitration panel isn't even considering it.
These supervisors are worried. They feel that this will affect morale on the force. Are you worried, or are you thinking this is going to take care of itself and not go through?
I think that the morale is low, and within a number of officers. There's been a lot of different changes that have happened. They've happened pretty quick. A lot of officers aren't feeling respected, and that comes all the way at the very top, where they feel that I'm not respecting them, and that isn't the case. I've been in city government for 22 years, and nobody can point to a time when I disrespected police officers. That's not in my DNA. And number two, I'm a big liberal. I mean, I'm about helping workers, and these are my guys. These are my employees and my gals, and I want to be able to help them as well. But what I can't do is I can't break the parameters of a legal agreement. So when their leadership tells them, look at what he's doing to us, it's not fair. They're talking about things that aren't even on the table. And when they say things like, well, he's taken away your personnel days, well, that's because their leadership came to the table and negotiated for extended disability for short-term and long-term, and the trade-off was that. And we accepted it because that's what the FOP leadership asked for. And then they come back and use it as a club and say, see, he doesn't like you. That is a very dangerous game, because public safety is a very, very critical part of every city. And right now, it's very difficult to be a police officer. I understand that. But when you're being misled by your own leadership and you don't have that ability to know what the actual discussion is and what the issues being decided by the arbitration panel are, and instead they throw out this issues that aren't even a part of it, and then try to make it to make the officers feel that those who are their supervisors and their mayor are working against them, that's not only unfair, that's wrong. It's just plain wrong. So we've gone through about six contracts. None of them had to go to arbitration. We didn't have to go to a judge. We didn't want to go to arbitration with the police. We tried to negotiate with them. Every other union that we worked with, we got the very, very best we could get our workers. And even like the fire contract, a lot of it was negotiated by Kevin Ackland sitting down with the guys having a beer and just talking without lawyers. That's where I wish we were with the FOP. That's where I want to go with the FOP. But I cannot negate an arbitration panel after a year and a half's work and just say, nope, we're not going to accept it. So when that arbitration panel comes out in the next week or so, and they have their recommendation and their law that they're putting, and it goes through the funnel of law of Act 47, and it provides what has been discussed at an open table by two sides for a year and a half, I'm accepting it. And if the FOP wants to work in the future and trying to work with us, I'm going to be open to that too.
And you say you support the police, so...
My uncle was a state trooper for 38 years. He raised me. I went to the state trooper picnics as a kid. I was a part of the police family. He became the superintendent of the township that I lived in, and oversaw all the police. And I knew the police when I was growing up. I stayed and hung out at the station. My grandfather was a federal police officer for Italy during World War I. I mean, it's the only people in my family that have any background in government work are my uncle and my brother, who was a lieutenant colonel in the Army, who is working with our police and our SWAT on asymmetrical warfare, training them with the best guys from special forces in order to learn hostage situation techniques. To just say you're anti-cop is ludicrous. It is absolutely, I have more respect for people in uniform than possibly any mayor in recent history.
So how do you get this across to the rank and file, to the officers who, if they're not listening to this program and hearing what you're saying now, are misinterpreting or don't understand how you truly feel on this issue?
I can't. I mean, it's not going to be done by words. It has to be done by action. So I've got to be able to, over the next several years, have a lot of different actions, which actually let not just the officers, but their families understand who I am. And that can only be done through action. It can't be done through words.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Mayor Bill Peduto, and we will continue with him. We need to take a break. You can join the conversation again at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002 with a comment or question for the mayor. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM, on Twitter at ESSPGH. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh, and we're visiting with Mayor Bill Peduto today, as we do each month on this program. And we've been talking about a lot of different issues, certainly the parade yesterday, the record-setting parade being one of them. But we're also getting into some other areas, and we'll continue to do so. And we want to hear from you about your concerns, your happiness, your joy, your tears, your sorrow, whatever it may be.
No, just joy.
Just joy. All right, yep. Just joy.
Just happy people.
At 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM. On Twitter at ESSPGH. It has been an interesting month here in the month of June for you, Mayor. And we're going to get to some of the other interesting endeavors that you've been involved with. But there is this nagging issue for you regarding that Sprint sign still on display at Mount Washington, despite a cease and desist letter issued by the city to Lamar Advertising and Sprint on the first of this month. Where do I checked to see that the sign is still there, apparently. Yep. Where do things stand with this?
Well, the attorney for Lamar is advising their client to avoid or to disrespect or to ignore the order of the city to remove it immediately. We are fining both Sprint and Lamar. Just want to make sure everyone hears those names, Sprint and Lamar. We are fining them on a daily basis. That horrible, yellow, tacky, vinyl sign litters our beautiful green hillside, and it is completely illegal. So going back to the late 1920s, when the permission was given to build a big sign up there, there were parameters given of what the sign could be and what it could say. And those provisions have both been ignored by Lamar and Sprint. Just want to make sure everyone hears those names again, Lamar and Sprint. And they do it for money. And they're just trying to get as much money and take advantage of a Stanley Cup run and a U.S. Open in order to get their name out there. So we've ended all meetings with Lamar, with their attorney. There are no more meetings happening with their attorney. And we are fining them until the day that they take down their horrible, tacky, yellow vinyl sign from our beautiful hillside.
Talk about, you started to get into some of the history of this in the 1920s when that sign went up. I guess when I was a kid, it was the Alcoa sign, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Yeah, and so there was like a red neon lettering, which as a kid at the time I thought was pretty cool, up there on that hillside. It gave the time.
Mm-hmm. It's different community events that were happening.
Right?
It is made to be a public notice sign, and the only other part that they can do other than telling people of time, weather, different community events that will be coming up is the name of the company. But in no terms that it was created did it ever allow vinyl. In no terms that it was created was it allowed to give a message that could be construed as a commercial message.
So they're being fined by the day, and obviously they haven't responded. How can they go on just ignoring what the city is saying they must do?
Well, if locally they continue to ignore it, and locally Sprint and Lamar continue to be defiant, then we go national and we take it to their national corporate headquarters to let them know what they're doing to the city of Pittsburgh.
it just seems incredible that they are that they are ignoring a cease and desist order. Well, moving on.
Well, they did it before, so you know, and they ended up doing things like slap suits and other parts in order to try and keep an illegal sign in the old Greyhound, the terminal building down, or the terminal parking garage in downtown Pittsburgh. And they fought to the very bitter end trying to keep an illegal sign up. And I guess that's just the tack their attorney chooses to take.
You were in Washington, D.C. last week making your final pitch for a $50 million smart city grant before U.S. Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox. We've talked about this on the show. Pittsburgh's in competition with six other cities. Where do things stand? When will we hear? And how did it go, by the way, the whole pitch there?
Weird.
Weird?
Yeah.
What was like weird about
Shark Tank for politicians. I mean, it was, you know, get on up and sell your city. You got 3 minutes to show a video, then 7 minutes to speak. And, you know, I know these guys pretty well, and especially got to know them even better through this competition. But, you know, really bright, smart, and passionate mayors of San Francisco, Portland, Oregon, Austin, Texas, Columbus, Kansas City, and Denver. But one of those cities is different than all the others, us. You know, Austin's a boom town. San Francisco gets smart city. Who cares? You know,
right.
It's got Silicon Valley. But you really want to tell a story about how a city can be transformed through technology and mobility and creating a new system. Pick a city like Pittsburgh. Pick a city that has gone through this incredible transformation, but still has the relics of a 1950s system for transportation. Take a city that hasn't been viewed not nearly as much as San Francisco or in Austin or as a Portland as being the tech city, and allow it to become the model and create the playbook for Buffalo and for Cleveland and for Topeka and all the other cities around this country. That was the message we gave. And we did it in a way that people would be very, very proud of. There's a great video that's out, and I'll ask your staff to tweet it out. All they have to do is Smart City Pittsburgh and then search by video, and it will come up. 3 minutes. And if you don't feel damn proud to be from Pittsburgh after watching that, then you don't have black and gold blood.
Katie Blackley is doing that, I believe, right as you speak. I see the thumbs moving, so we'll get that done for you. So when will we hear?
This month. That's a very...
Well, there's only 14
today,
days.
Today, 2 weeks, next Thursday. We don't know. We don't know. And we don't know even how they're going to announce it. So, yeah, it would be truly amazing. Hopefully we win.
And what would be the first thing you do if you do win? What happens immediately?
Low-hanging fruit right now is developing an app that would be able to provide not only services to the homeless, but also there is a shuttle service that works around the city twice a day to take the homeless to where they need to be. And that would be geared with GPS and the ability for our homeless residents to be able to know where the shuttle is going to be, when it's going to be, and how to get to where they need to get to. That would be something we'd be able to implement over the summer. And that, by the way, is really an initiative of the Homeless Children's Education Fund that we've partnered in order to get some additional resources behind it to even expand upon it.
Before we wrap this up, we have to get to Guster. you had a chance. Was this your debut singing on stage, doing a little rock?
No, I used to play a little bit with a band called Lohio, one song at Brillo Box and a couple other places. So it was sort of a fun thing that we used to do. And those guys are all good friends of mine. And
let's tweet that video out.
It's out there. It's out there. Yeah. I lost a karaoke band challenge where you actually have an entire band play with you. And I had to sing a song. I did a Surrender by Cheap Trick.
I wouldn't give to hear that.
It's out there too. Okay. It's all out there.
All right, good.
But then this was my debut at TRAF, the Three Rivers Arts Festival.
Right, on the big stage with a big name group.
Yeah, and this was a lot of the folks down the hall from WYEP were behind it as well. So the band came into town last January. They got stuck. There was that big storm that just shut down the turnpike, and they literally love Pittsburgh. So they said, let's just spend that time off in Pittsburgh. And they stayed over in the north side. They visited Randy Land. They went to Wilson's Barbecue. They did all these different things that they just loved. And then they decided to just perform a concert in an alleyway next to a dumpster and to broadcast it on Facebook. And I tweeted to them. They tweeted back, and it started this thing back and forth. And then they finally said they would come back to Pittsburgh if I would perform a song with them. And I said, I will only perform a song with you if you write a song about Pittsburgh, dogs, snowstorms, alleys, and dumpsters. And they wrote a song called Pittsburgh, Dogs, Snowstorms, Alleys, and Dumpsters. And it involves Kennywood, and it involves Wilson's, and Randy Land, and Squirrel Hill, and Northside. And it really is a good song, too. So what they said right before the show, we just need you to go out there, and during the pause part, we need you to give a speech. And I'm like, about what? They're like, just speak about anything. So I completely ad-libbed the story of them coming into Pittsburgh in January and then coming back and welcoming them to Pittsburgh in June.
So this was for how long did it take to do this? Your part?
Less than a minute.
Less than a minute. So you ad-lib this thing and then they go right back into the song?
Yeah. And they go into this verse, this chorus of, I'm not going to sing it, I almost sang it, Canyons Hear Me. Canyons Hear Me.
Go, Bill. Go.
But it was a magical moment of the Three Rivers Arts Festival. I don't know what it was. It was a lot of fun. They're really good guys. They met each other up in Boston at Tufts, and just super nice, friendly, funny people.
It sounds like an amazing experience. Did you get to go in on that chorus there, that refrain?
I quickly exited the stage. Quickly.
Well, it sounds like quite the experience. And
it's all out there on the inner tubes. So, you know, you can catch it all.
We're going to have links.
Your mayor embarrassing the people he serves.
Oh, I think people think it's probably a pretty cool thing. And I'm sure it was for you. Mayor Peduto, as always, thanks so much for being with us. We'll catch you at some point in the next month or so, but probably not before July 4th.
Yeah.
So I always like to wish you happy whatever the next holiday is. So happy Independence Day.
Well, let's try and get together between then and July 9th, because 9th is Happy Birthday Pittsburgh.
Let's do it. All right. We'll work with your office, and we'll have you in someday in that five-day window.
One of those 5 days.
Okay.
There
you got it. Mayor Peduto, thank you again.
Thanks, Paul.
And congrats to the Penguins and to you, because as the person presiding over this city, you are a part of it.
Yeah, I was really big on that power play.
Yes, you were.
Me and Letang.
Killing off those penalties. Mayor Peduto again joining us on Essential Pittsburgh. Coming up, we'll look at a new program aimed at reversing the impact of delirium. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.